Hey everyone, Will here. Before we begin this descent into depravity and darkness, a couple of things that you guys might want to know before listening to our podcast. Firstly, we're playing Call of Cthulhu 7th Edition. We focus on storytelling, narrative, and horror, which means that we play fairly stripped back Cthulhu rules. We let the dice tell the story. Secondly, Tomes and Tentacles features elements of horror that younger listeners might find uncomfortable. Be advised. There is also plenty of humor too, of course, so fear not. And lastly, we are sponsored by dndice.co.uk, who produce some amazing dice for your own Cthulhu games at home. You can get 5% off all of their dice when you use the coupon code EncounterRoleplay at checkout. We really hope you enjoy our story. Now, journey with us to Carcosa.
That is not dead which can eternal lie, and with strange eons even death may die.
Hello everybody and welcome to Tomes and Tentacles, a Call of Cthulhu 7th edition actual play podcast presented by Encounter Roleplay. That's me, my name's Will. I'm not your keeper for tonight. No, my friends, for we have a more fell foe here with us today who will be our keeper. We have the wonderful Ben Counter. How are you doing, my friend?
Hello there, I'm very well, thank you. I am, as you say, Ben Counter. I'm a freelance writer and a games designer and, for now, your keeper.
Incredible. So let's go around. Let's meet the rest of the cast for today before we meet their characters. Let's start with Lindy. How are you?
I'm doing spiffy. Spiffy. Super happy to get into some tomes and some tentacles.
Oh, yeah. We also have Don with us today. Don, how are you doing, my friend?
Hey, Will. I'm doing great. I'm also really, really excited. I love Call of Cthulhu, and this is going to be great.
Hell yeah. We also have Greg, Grimjack2152 of us tonight. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing real well. For some reason, I'm nervous. Normally, I'm never nervous when we do live shows, but for some reason, this podcast and the idea of having a keeper like Ben is really scaring me. So I'm hoping to keep myself modulated. I'm hoping to perform to the best of my character's abilities, which is very, very poor. So I've set a low bar. I can't wait. Let's get into this.
Let's do this thing. So without any further ado, I hand you over to Mr. Ben Counter.
Very well. Good evening, everyone. They call me Ben, and I will be your keeper of arcane lore. Exeunt omnes. Act 1. Scene 1. The curtain raises on... what else? A stage. Specifically, the stage of the Arkham Grand Theatre, an establishment once handsome and lavish, but which has since seen better days. The year is 1931. The occasion is a gathering of the Arkham Theatre and Musical Society, whose members are attending the first rehearsal of a new production. The chairman of the society, Frederick Hirsch, is waiting in the auditorium when you enter. He's a man in late middle age, smoking a pipe, wearing a well-worn brown suit. He has with him a cardboard box full of small books with yellow covers. Samuel Boggs, the theatre's custodian, is watching dispassionately from one of the boxes overlooking the stage, leaning on his broom. And Frederick Hirsch exclaims, "Ladies and gentlemen, I am so glad you could all be here. This is a most exciting occasion. Please, please, take a copy." In the box are several copies of a play entitled The King in Yellow. And who has attended this gathering in the Arkham Grand? Who's, along with Mr. Hirsch and the disinterested custodian, who's turned up for the first read-through of this exciting new production?
In the wings of the theater, in the shadows, kind of peeking around the curtain towards the players and the readers, is a young man, a young 34, so young-ish man, named Otto Keller. And Otto Keller is unremarkable in most ways. He's a small man, about 5'6". And the most remarkable thing about him is that he suffers from kyphosis. So he has a severe hunch to his back. He would be a hunchback. Atop his head, he has a mop of curly blonde hair and a set of wide, energetic, Northern European-looking eyes. If he didn't have a hunchback, he might have been a reasonably passable fellow, but in this life, he is looked down upon by many members of the Arkham community. But as he's watching, he's very, very eager to see the read-through begin.
Has Master Keller been in the theater before? Is he new to performance, or has he done it before?
So Otto was once a circus performer, not a very good one. He had one thing that he did particularly well, which was at the end of every show, he would don a monstrous mask and climb up a pole and kidnap the star trapeze artist of the circus. And the watchers in the crowd would be encouraged to throw things at him and jeer at him. And then he would feign to fall and fake his own death. And that was sort of his act. So that's the most acting he's ever done in front of a crowd. But over the past couple of years, he has been working as a stagehand for the society, for their shows. He's very, very handy. So he's been called upon to fix a lot of mechanical instruments and whatnot and help build props and sets and that sort of thing.
Okay, and Hirsch exclaims, "Oh, Otto, brilliant! I was so glad you're here. Listen, I think this is the perfect play for you. There's plenty of gamboling and traipsing and tumbling and so forth. I'm really excited to see how you get hold of this. So, who else has joined Mr. Hirsch and Mr. Keller today?
Estelle would be there. She would have pulled up in her hearse early to get to the theater to make sure all the stage makeup was ready for the end, special effects, any blood that was necessary, for example, or confetti, all that stuff was ready before everybody else got there. Probably about the same time Otto arrived. She'd be very unenthusiastically looking at this box of scripts that aren't hers, because she's an aspiring scriptwriter. She's rather slender. About average height, maybe a little below average. She has very long, almost kind of stringy black hair. She wears down, very pale, with dark circles under her eyes, which are blue. And she's just kind of casually walks over and picks up a book and starts flipping through it.
Okay, and again, Estelle, what's her past with all things theatrical?
Estelle Graves. Her past with the theater is mostly behind the scenes. She's done some acting, but mostly it's the makeup and the special effects. And she, every year, every season, there's a new script coming out. She always submits her own, and it's always been rejected. So she's just, for being mostly usually too bloody or gory or depressing, but she keeps trying. One day she's going to get in there.
Okay. There are a couple more. Thespians have also entered the auditorium.
Okay, so an uncomfortable amount of time passes from when the scheduled meeting was supposed to be for the first run-through, the first read-through, and from the end of the theater opening out into the house proper, the doors swing open widely as almost a gunslinger coming in through a saloon door walks the most handsome man that many of these people probably have ever seen or will ever see, or will ever see, because Caesar Cole has just entered the theater. And Caesar stands at 5'10". He's thin, but not athletically inclined. And if asked, anybody that would see him, his body type would match their perfect fantasy. He's not too muscular, but he's not too thin. He's not scrawny, but he's got a little meat on his bones. And where his body takes their breath, his face takes their mind. As they see him with the chiseled jaw, the perfect, dark, thick hair that's coiffed ever so expertly behind him. And as he walks in, his eyes, ice blue, almost white, but with just a hint of color, something that in the silence and the black and white movies of the day would drive the women and the men crazy with jealousy or desire. And as he walks in, he strides one foot confidently in front of the other. And as he gets close, he takes his Stetson off and he swings it on the end of the broom that the janitor is holding, as if treating the man as an inanimate object, as little more than a coat rack. He takes off his overcoat, which is perfectly pressed, perfectly taken care of, nary a thread out of place, nary a smudge or a stain or a bit of spilled alcohol, nothing. It is perfect, just like the man that's wearing it. And as he takes the jacket and throws it over the third row chair on the aisle, he stands, inhales, looks at everyone and says, "This smells like a success."
Glad you could join us, Mr. Cole. I think this one's got just the part for you. There's a king, you see.
So be it. A king again.
And the last member of our company?
Making a much less theatrical entrance is Jack Deacon, who stumbles in past a someone that's on the door, pushes past, thrusting his ticket into their hands as he comes in reeking of alcohol. This guy in his 40s.
You have just handed your ticket to the janitor, to Mr. Yes. Boggs, who looks at it confusedly and then just shrugs and puts it in his pocket.
That makes a lot of
sense. We've all been there,
Jack.
His face says.
So, yes, reeking of alcohol, you see this guy in his 40s with a long trench coat on. Somewhere in those pockets, he would find his pipe, though he has lost it and he hasn't been able to find it for a couple of years now, but it's in there somewhere. He's got dark, sagging eyes, and his skin has become blotchy, kind of blotchy red with years of substance abuse. He moves with this slight sway to him, and the smell which comes off him is enough to confirm everyone's suspicions that Mr. Deacon...
I think they're beyond suspicions.
Yeah, he's pretty well roasted right now. He also carries with him a briefcase at all times, though if one were to open it up, they would find that it was completely empty, but he will not be parted from his briefcase. And Jack comes in an absolute state, and on Caesar Cole's perfect shoulder, he rests his body and puts an arm over him as though he were very familiar with him and says, "Hey, whoa, are we here in time for the thing?"
Caesar immediately turns to sweep the hand from his shoulder.
Whoa.
But when he sees that it's Jack Deacon, the director of the show,
that's
his
right.
hand freezes, and as if it always meant to, he pats the hand that's on his shoulder, and he says, "Mr. Deacon, it is good to see you, sir. I believe that this may, in fact, be a comeback story for the ages."
That makes a lot of sense, because Mr. Deacon was once a very virtuoso playwright in his time, performing in the West End of London. But he's fallen on some harder times after a couple of events led his life into the downward spiral, which has led him here. But he nods with an arrogance and a smile as though he knew this was going to happen. And yeah, that's right. This is just the beginning, I feel, you know. It all comes back from here. Yep.
And I'm glad you feel that way, Jack. I really am. Listen, I think this is the way to make it happen. And he pushes a copy of The King in Yellow into Jack's hand. It is a small, what you think is probably a very short run print job. A yellow cover, simple title on it, and there's no kind of write-up on the back. There's also no author. What I was thinking is we could start to read through now, just plunge straight on into it. I haven't got any too much concrete ideas about what we're going to do yet. I was hoping that you could help me come up with some of those.
No, we don't need no concrete here. No, we need wall plaster. That's what thinking, you know, just nice... and messy,
yes,
and we can
yes,
mold
it. It's the ore from which we shall refine our play. Now, listen, this is really very exciting. This play was published during the Renaissance, but no one knows who wrote it, and it was apparently it was suppressed by the Vatican. Anyway, this is a new translation, and it's the very first time it's been in English. These are the first copies of this play in English in the whole country. Now, I won't lie to you, it's not an easy text, but Blanche and I are very enthusiastic about it. She should be here by now. I'm sure she's just running late. We'll start without her.
Yeah, let's get some whiskies, and let's get to reading.
Now, you guys know that he's referring to Blanche McGillicuddy, who is a veteran of the stage and one of the pillars of the Arkham Theatrical and Musical Society. It's unusual for her not to be here. How and whether you met her before, what you think of her, how much how well you know her is up to you guys. But there is maybe a faded dame of the theatre who is in the company and is presumably in this play but isn't here yet. And Hirsch suggests, listen, why don't we just dive straight in and, well, you three, and he points to Estelle, Otto, and Caesar. I think we can have you read in for the time being. Caesar, of course, I think you'd make an excellent king. Otto, how about the pauper? And then Estelle can be our queen in Blanche's absence.
She's going to look over at Caesar and kind of blush a little bit.
Caesar pays her no mind whatsoever. His eyes are fixed almost entirely on Mr. Jack Deacon, because Caesar is well aware of Jack's former fame and hopes to recapture some of it with him. Perhaps the coattails are big enough.
Otto comes out from behind the stage from the wings, and he takes up one of the copies of the play in his hands, and he looks up to the producer, and he says,
You want me to read, sir?
Why? Yes, of course. I think you'd be an excellent pauper. He does a lot of tumbling and buffoonery and so forth. I read this pathetic, wizened, downtrodden, laughed at characters, and you know what? I thought of Otto.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'll do my best, sir.
Okay, so Caesar is the king. Otto, you're the pauper, and Estelle, you are the queen. So you step up onto the stage, and can we begin our read-through? The king sits enthroned in rags and tatters. He is attended upon by his queen, who is turning into a dog. A pauper dances and gambols.
What a realm I have! Did any horizon stretch so far as to encompass my domain? The most beautiful of maidens weep in their goblets. The gibbets.
It's gibbets. It's a thing you hang people from, Caesar. Gibbets.
I like his interpretation. I like goblets.
I can make a note to look it up for Mr. Deacon.
So we'll leave it as goblets now. The most beautiful of maidens weep in their goblets.
Otto is looking around nervously, and then once they finally decide that they're going to go with goblets, he speaks up almost a little too loud, and he says,
Marry, uncle, thou art not the king. The king is in the lake, and the lake is the city.
My wine flows like blood. The greatest minds of my kingdom were heaped up before my throne.
Mr. Deacon, Mr. Cole is aware that the show week is going to be more than one night. We can't really go beyond the first performance if he chews up all the scenery.
Let him do his thing.
Okay, I see.
well, let's just get it raw. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yes, I see what you mean. Yes, this is your department. I do apologize.
Yeah, no, just quit interrupting. It's annoying.
Estelle's going to kind of like wait for them to stop bickering. She's going to kind of adjust her dress a little bit, which is about 15 to 20 years like behind the current fashion.
Jack will say, carry on, sweetheart, go.
Woof, woof. A kingdom of rags, tatters. Woof.
But what of the newcomers within our borders, uncle? They violate your sovereignty.
Woof. He knows nothing of violation. Who leaves my bed bereft of spawn? Woof, woof, grr.
At this point, Mr. Deacon, as if to spare yourself witnessing the performances too closely, you cannot help but be enthralled by the architecture of the Arkham Grand. It was once a music hall where the acts performed in front of a neoclassical backdrop of false columns and Rococo scrollwork. Normally it's obscured by scenery flats, but now you can see every peeling curl and faded stroke of paint. And you're hit by a dizzy spell as the patterns seem to move and converge before your eyes. You are no longer on the stage, Jack. You're somewhere else. A pit. A hole. the base of a long dark shaft like a deep well. From the walls extrude hundreds of hands grabbing at you and arresting your fall. The faint light above you is obscured by a many-legged, spider-like shape that crawls into the shaft above you. You can just make out its facial features, a wide, grotesque smile and sunken black eyes. It reaches its clawed hands down at you, caressing your face with sharp edges of chitin and bone. "Why have you come to my web?" it hisses gleefully. "What do you want, little one?" And Mr. Deacon, what do you do?
Jack is breathing really heavily. His eyes have gone wide. He's trying to wake up from this nightmare.
I don't know why I came here. I didn't try and come here. I've been taken here.
But what do you want?
I wanna do art. I wanna be famous again.
Meanwhile, the read-through continues as Jack Deacon's attention seems to be wavering, but you continue nonetheless.
Otto continues swinging his arms broadly, starting to try to get into the role, but still awkwardly loud. "Bibbidi bobbidi, wear the yellow sign, Uncle."
"Out, ragged waif, out, you scrofulous bean, thou dissembler of cats, thou guzzler of sponges, be gone from my sight, lest thy maggoty rump squirmeth upon mine countenance."
There's a sort of darkness that suddenly casts itself across Otto's face as this line occurs, and before he reads his next line, his head bows a little bit towards his chest, and he says, "'Tis a sin to disbar a pauper thus."
"I was talking to her."
Woof.
Your attention is consumed by the bizarre play, and you've lost track of Jack. It's therefore a great surprise when he's hurtled from the back of the stage and slams into the boards. Mr. Deacon, can you please make me, I'm going to make it dexterity times three test.
That is a success.
A success. You manage to roll as you land and avoid doing yourself too severe damage. However, you are going to need to make me a sanity test for what you've just witnessed.
That is a 59, a success.
Okay, so you lose 1 point of sanity from this otherworldly experience.
Oh my god.
So, your director is suddenly at your feet on the ground, sprawling, looking extremely shocked. Rather sober, suddenly, as well. And Hirsch exclaims, "Oh, dear God, what was that? What just happened, Jack?"
I was just testing out some of the scenery. Yeah.
Caesar moves forward and doesn't pretend to even acknowledge the fact that Jack's laying on the boards or could potentially be hurt. And he kind of crouches a bit and he holds the script up to Jack and he says, "Now, am I to believe that this," and he points over to Otto, "person is my nephew?" The audience isn't going to believe that.
If I may, says Hirsch, it's a Renaissance thing. It's not uncle, it's nuncle. It's a King Lear thing. It's a mad person jester saying, it's a thing that they say. It's trust me, the audience will get it.
It says uncle.
Jack looks like really distant. He's kind of like looking through you. He's like, "Yeah, sure.
I think we should change that word."
Estelle's going to come over and try to like check on Jack. "Oh, are you all right?"
"Yeah, no, I'm fine. Hey, you don't have any drink on you, do you, sweetheart?"
Not currently, no.
"Oh.
I may have something out back, you know, for cuts and scrapes," says Boggs, the custodian who's been watching all this. Doesn't seem to have been moved either way by it so far.
"Yeah, thanks, Boggs, that would be great."
"Okay.
That run through, that was great, sweetheart. That was fucking biblical. I really enjoyed that."
"Biblical is a plague of frogs, darling."
She's gonna be like, you really think so?
It was, I was inspired, and Caesar, that was,
I know.
That was like, I know you do. What was your name, kid? I look at Otto.
I'm Otto, sir. I'm Otto.
Otto. Well, it's gonna take some work, you know. Have you been in the theater before? Have you worked on stage?
Otto's looking at him with these big, eager eyes, and he doesn't seem struck or discouraged by Jack telling him that it's going to take some work. He answers and he says, well, yes, I was in the circus act before, the Flying Horvaths, and I mostly did climbing, and I wore a mask, and I was trying to scare the audience, but I've never played a character that had lines before.
Got it. Did they, kid, did they, in this circus of yours, did they treat you like a freak?
Well, I mean, everyone's a freak in the circus to some extent, yes, so I suppose so.
Yeah. Well, when you're on stage, kid, you can't be thinking that you're a freak. Okay, you're a person, like us. Even if you are a bit hunchback.
Caesar seems ready to object and lowers his hand again.
Well, thank you, Mr. Deacon. What if my character is a freak, though? Then what do I do?
Well, you play the role, but whenever you're on stage, you can't be playing yourself, understood? So you gotta play the role. You don't play yourself. When you're on there, you're playing the freak, but you know deep down that you're an actor. In one of my performances, which makes you a star. Okay?
Here, here.
Okay. I'll be an actor, sir.
I pat the kid on the head. There's definitely some, like, sympathy that Jack looks at Otto with, which is dissimilar to his ordinary swagger and arrogance and drunken state. But now he's sobered up a little. There's a kindness to his eyes.
And Otto seems very, very grateful. His cheeks kind of go red. And he's used to being spoken down to. And he's seen kindness in his life, too. But he cherishes it whenever it happens because it is kind of rare for someone to speak so gently towards him as Jack has. And he says, I'll try not to let you down, sir.
I believe it. Now, Boggs, where's that drink?
If you follow me, sir, just got in the men's dressing room. Just keep a little something stashed for medicinal purposes. And he heads off through the wings towards where the dressing rooms are in the back. So the theatre, there's a men's and a women's dressing room in the back. There's also stairs leading to a storage area under the stage back here. Then in the front, there's the ticket office and the lobby. And Hirsch says to those who are still on the stage, I think we can take a pause there. As I'm sure you're aware by now, it's a challenging text. It's more about metaphor than it is about cause and effect. It was truly groundbreaking, not just for its time, but ever. There are, I should point out now, along with the more obscure and arcane passages, some unexpected moments of, well, bloodshed and violence and furthermore, they're completely necessary for the atmosphere and flow of the text, but it may be challenging to reproduce on stage, both practically and emotionally.
Don't you worry, sir. I will rise to the occasion. Excellent. And procure the effects and blood necessary. And in the next reading, I'll put more passion into it. I didn't know that with this kind of play.
Blood is one thing, Miss Grades. We will also need, yes, quite a lot of entrails.
Yes.
At least one pair of lungs. Most
let
organs,
me write
just
this
assume
down.
All the organs.
Entrails.
At some point.
Lungs.
Skin.
A whole skin.
Whole skin, yeah. Spine. And the spine, you need to be able to take the spine out of a person. It's you'll see as we get along that the practical challenges that this particular play will provide.
Oh. I don't see these as challenges. I see these as exciting goals to achieve.
Oh, wonderful. That's an excellent attitude, young lady. Yes, that's very, very good. Boggs has led Jack backstage into the gentleman's dressing room.
which has several tables attached to the walls with mirrors ringed by lights. And there's a few playbills from old plays, mostly Shakespeare, framed on the walls. Then there's a sink, and there's a kind of attached small room with a sink and a toilet in it. Box heads into this small attached room, lifts the top off the cistern, and takes out a bottle of hard liquor. It's bourbon that he's kept in the cistern to keep it cool and to keep it away from prying eyes.
Yeah, sir, I can't promise it's the finest vintage, but it should get the job done, sir.
No, it'll do. Tell me, have you ever seen anything real strange around here?
In this place? Well, listen, this is an old building, sir. There's always going to be strange sounds and noises and so forth. It's just that kind of place. You know, I heard tell of the people who founded it. They were a strange couple of birds. You know about them?
I can't say I have.
You can make a history check if you wish to recall some history about the Arkham Grand.
No, that's a fail.
Okay. You haven't heard of them, but he'll say, well, they're cranes, they were called. They were,
I'm guessing, spiritualists. In the last century, folks were thought they were spirits and so forth, and ghosts and seances. Oh, my great-aunt said that they were all just a bunch of charlatans, but some of them really believed. These couple that built this place, they were like that. And so people say, well, of course it's going to be haunted and such like. I'd never seen a ghost. I felt things here.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's anything you wouldn't feel in any old dark building what people say is haunted.
I take a swig of the drink and say,
yeah, well, I know a little something about being haunted, I guess, but...
That's so. You had a funny turn up there. I saw it. Not the whole thing. Don't know where you went. I lost track of you, but...
Yeah, no, I don't
know
where
you okay there, Mr. Deacon?
I'm feeling fine now. It's, just brought up some old stuff, you know?
Okay.
But, anyway. This Blanche... She meant to be here. I don't know much about her. I mean, I really just came over.
Yeah, I got word to let you folks in if you came about early. Apparently, this Blanche lady was gonna... had a habit of being here for anyone else, make it seem like she was... cared more than everybody else, but she didn't. I don't know where she at.
Oh, well. With the talent I've got back in there, I reckon we'll be set anyway.
You think so, do you?
Well, my friend... You give a cook the best ingredients in the world, and he can make you an okay
cake?
Meal. He can make you a cake. He can make you a basic fucking cake. But you give the best chef in the world basic ingredients, and I will make you a fucking platter of cakes.
They're pretty basic. I don't know much about art, but I know what I like. And I'm guessing you better be the grand high poobah of grand wizard of bacon cakes, if you don't mind my saying, sir.
Well, I'll best go get to mixing.
Well, all right. See you there. Got dark early, don't you think?
And you see through the window of the dressing room, it's kind of frosted, but it has got very dark, and you can't even see the streetlights or anything like that outside. It's just this dark grey mass, and as you notice, it seems to be moving, seething, as if there was black smoke outside the window, not just darkness.
Is this normal around here? That looks kind of strange, don't you think?
Must be turning the weather. You know what weather's like in these parts, due to like to turn on a dime.
Yeah, I guess you're right. And Deacon will raise a drink to Boggs and head back to the main stage.
Okay.
I'll say, all right, everyone, that was a great first read-through. We're going to have to do a little bit of work on everything. You know, I've got to talk to Hirsch here and figure out exactly what we can do. We are going to need a lot of spines, I believe, just having a flick through.
Any of you guys who've leafed through the play a little bit, it is as Hirsch has suggested. Very obscure, doesn't seem to be a lot of cause and effects. Lots of characters come in and out. No real threads that run through it all. And some of the scenes are completely different from others in tone and structure.
It's beautiful. It's art.
I like it. I usually don't like scripts that aren't written by me. But I like this one.
Sweetheart, you write scripts?
I do. Would you like to read them?
I'd love to. What kind of works do you write?
Well, usually, she's kind of going to glance over at Hirsch, they get rejected, but...
Rejected?
Estelle, you always carry a selection of scripts with you, but at the moment they're in your car outside.
I'll have to run out to my vehicle. Would you like to accompany me?
Yeah, sure. Ah, one sec. And I grab my briefcase.
While he's taking a break to grab his briefcase and Estelle's moving towards the rear of the house, Caesar will stop her for a second and, you know, just kind of intercede himself between her and her objective. And he says,
so, Sunset, a whore of us, that's prostitutes, right?
Pardon? Are you calling me a prostitute?
No, the question mark said something about a whore of us. I assume he means prostitutes.
I don't think a whore of us is a whore. I think they're separate things. I could be mistaken, though. Let me pull out my pocket dictionary.
We're going to assume it's a prostitute. I'm almost always right.
I'm sure you are,
she says, thoroughly unconvinced.
Prostitutes. How do you climb a prostitute?
As I move past, I just slap Caesar on the shoulder real fine. I mean, it was...
I know.
I mean, I know, you know. And I head with her still.
So, you guys head out into the lobby, which is where the main doors to the street are. And it's decorated in dark red and faded gilt. There's a ticket window and seating for patrons waiting for performance. There's large doors heading to the street outside. There's a large glass display case in one corner, kind of almost like a museum exhibit. You reach these main doors and they are locked. Although, this is the way you came in, and they certainly weren't locked when you entered. In fact, they seem more than locked. They seem like they're barred. They're completely immobile.
This is odd. Usually they lock the doors from the inside, that way, you know, patrons can't get in while we're rehearsing, but these seem to be barred.
That's probably that Boggs guy. He seemed to be the janitor around here. Probably got a set of keys, right?
I would assume so. Shall we obtain him?
Yeah, I guess we'll obtain him. You got a really nice way of speaking. It works really well for the stage. What is it you do? I mean, are you a full-time actor?
No, I am the proprietor of the Miskatonic Funeral Parlor and Crematorium.
Whoa. So you you deal with dead people?
Frequently. In fact, I see more dead people than I do living normally.
Yeah.
At least on a daily basis.
Wow. That's gotta be tough, I guess.
No, they're easier to work with.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Back in the auditorium, Mr. Boggs is there, looking expectantly as you suddenly re-enter.
Mr. Boggs, did you perchance have the keys to the front door?
I got them here. I'm a key holder for this place. I didn't lock them, though. I opened it up like I was told.
They appear to be locked and possibly barred.
And he grumbles and emerges into the lobby, tries to unlock them.
They ain't locked. Just not opening. Damnedest thing. Guess I could leg up out of one of the windows in the back and try and make around the front and see if there's some obstruction. Unless one of you want to do it.
Well, I mean, there's got to be another way out of here, right? But, I mean, it's not that big a deal. Estelle, I can always take a look at the papers another time. I mean,
I'd like to know if we're locked up in here. That's no good.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mr. Boggs, why don't you go take a look, see if we're locked up, and in the meantime, let's get some work done here, because, you know, okay, the sun is fading pretty quick, and I do my best work in daylight.
Isn't it a bit early for that?
It's strange weather outside.
The weather's usually strange here in Arkham.
Is it now?
Mr. Boggs heads around to the back to the dressing rooms, where you guys were earlier, and Mr. Hirsch says, if there is some kind of problem, Jack?
No. The guys must have locked us in, or maybe someone parked in front of the front doors or something, because they're not opening.
They're not opening? What do you mean?
I mean, they don't fucking open, man. I mean, how much simpler can it be? Now, I mean, those words were pretty simple. If we're gonna have to be deciphering the King in Yellow, you gotta... Come on.
Here, here.
You mean we're stuck in here? Oh dear. Oh good lord, oh dear. And he takes a handkerchief and begins dabbing his forehead.
Don't worry about it.
Please don't panic.
back in the West End, I used to do this all the time. I used to get first time we get all the actors together, I lock us all in overnight. It's a bonding experience. Okay, this
sounds thrilling.
It's a problem I have. It's something early in my life. Don't you worry. I think oh goodness, and then there is a piercing scream from somewhere behind the stage.
Fucking hell.
Does it sound like Boggs?
It could be, although it's difficult to tell. People sound different when they're in extremes of panic.
Someone might have fallen over. Let's get over there. There's a whole bunch of shit back there. Anything could have happened.
Yes.
Is this our job? I work on the stage. I do not work behind it.
Otto raises his hand and he says, I'll go check, sir.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'll go with you, and I'll pull out my tape measure because that could have been a death scream. He might have to get fitted for a coffin.
So now, while you two do that, Caesar, a couple of notes. And
notes?
So, Otto and Estelle, you heading backstage?
Yes.
Heading backstage, and Otto, as he moves, his arm sort of sways side to side. It's a very unbecoming way of moving, but he does wave hello to Estelle as she joins him, and he says, "Hi, I'm Otto. It's good to meet you."
Hello, Otto. My name is Estelle. It's a pleasure, I'm sure.
And then they head back into the wings.
You can hear a commotion from the women's dressing room. Sounds almost like... It sounds like there's a whirlwind inside, a buffeting and a crashing and a slamming from inside. So if it's a person in there, they're kind of thrashing around. It sounds like there's more than just a person inside.
Hmm.
Is there any sign of distress, physical distress, outside of the room? Like maybe something's been overturned?
No, but it looks like the door's banging kind of in its frame as if someone's shaking it.
Oh, well, is that... Do you think that's...
That's not normal.
No, that's not... I've seen Miss Blanche before. She gets pretty angry sometimes.
I don't think she gets that angry.
Well, I'll just crack it a little bit, and he slowly tries to push on the door just to see if he can get it open slightly.
So, Jack, what were the notes that you had for Caesar? Let's hear them.
Before Jack gets a chance to say anything, Caesar saddles right up next to him, and as he, you know, smells wonderful as he pulls up beside Jack, and he looks over with a sympathetic look in his eye, and he says,
"They haven't given you much to work with, Mr. Deegan, but trust in me, and we will go far. I'll carry you on my back straight to the West End."
Jack kind of sways a little bit as the alcohol's kind of kicking back in, and he's kind of gotten back to the nice state that he was in when he got here with the help of Boggs's drink and settling down after the things that he saw.
Yeah, no, I mean, what they gave me here... It's like a tapestry just waiting to be threaded together. And let me tell you, I am excited. When I say notes, what I mean is how to deal with Hirsch here.
And I, you know, point to Hirsch, who's over in a corner.
Ah, that's what I figured.
Guy's clearly an amateur.
Absolutely.
We don't listen to what he's saying mostly, except for when it comes to money. And most of the time when it comes to money, we don't listen to him either, okay?
I couldn't pick his voice out of a lineup. I haven't listened to a word he said yet.
This is a conspiratorial kind of whispered conversation that we're having.
Mr. Hirsch has seen you guys nattering away in and walks up to you and says, "Mr. Deacon, I hope, and Mr. Cole, I hope you can agree that... This play, it's the opportunity to be the first, the very first to bring this play to the light of the world. You know, it's been 400 years since it was performed. They say it had one production in Florence, I believe, and was immediately suppressed and was never shown again.
So like I was saying, Caesar, what we need to do is, next time, I think the goblets is definitely the word to go
with. I agree.
And... Jack just completely ignores, talks over the guy, and he's incredibly rude at this point.
I think this will finally put the Arkham Theatre and Musical Society on the map. I can finally be someone. We can finally be someone.
Oh, sorry, I missed most of that, but whatever you do, don't repeat it, because it'll just go right over.
Mr. Deacon is working, Mr. Hirsch.
This is just what happens when I'm working. I'm working right now. It's
Of course.
I'm currently in I'm putting things out into the world. I'm not taking them in.
I'm not familiar with the ins and outs of the creative process. I do apologize.
Right now I'm an out. Later on I'll be in.
You're finger painting with a man with brushes.
Meanwhile, backstage, Mr. Keller opens the door a crack and is assailed by a spray of flying and biting insects.
Oh dear.
A mass of them erupts from the door, and among them stumbles Mr. Boggs, who's covered in them head to toe, crying out, flailing, panicking. The first thing we're going to do is that both of you present are going to make a sanity check.
Yay. Success.
Excellent. And Miss Graves?
Success.
Excellent. Okay, you are able to rationalize this being some kind of unseasonal insect swarm. Mr. Boggs stumbles out, falls onto the floor of the wings. Mr. Keller, can you please, if you wish to shut the door, you're going to need to make... this will be strength. So make a roll against your strength to see if you can force the door shut.
So Otto is swatting at the buzzing insects with his flailing arms, and he hunches over and tries to ram his shoulder into the door to shove it closed, and I roll a 19. This is a success.
So you slam the door shut just as a hideous thing like a greatly oversized silverfish attempts to squirm its way through and sink its mandibles into your soft flesh. But with a good shove, you slam the door in such a way that the creature is cut in two. There is a massive insect still that have escaped into the wings, and Boggs is covered in it. He is flailing and moaning and crying out on the floor.
Is there a fire extinguisher nearby?
Why don't we roll luck?
Okay.
And see if there is a fire extinguisher nearby.
Success!
It would be a sensible thing to have backstage, but this place probably isn't up to code. Fortunately, someone has been smart enough to put a fire extinguisher back here, and you grab it.
Yeah, because I don't think the bugs are really going to be able to withstand the chemicals that are in the fire extinguisher, so I'm just going to spray them all down.
Okay, so we'll say it's kind of a dry powder type. So you fill backstage area with clouds of this fire dampening powder. It's like the place is full of smoke suddenly. The bugs are dampened down, but so are you. Mr. Boggs will need help on the floor.
Does he look like he's going to make it?
You'd have to get him out of here probably to be sure.
And does it feel like something's struggling on the other side of the door after I shut it?
There's still something moving in there, like a very heavy wind blowing through the room.
So Otto, after he closes the door, he has his arms pressed up against the back of it, and he's trying to keep it closed, and he's breathing heavily.
You think it'll stay closed? Because it did before. Whatever's in there is contained within the room. Now you've been able to shut the door closed. And this half of a giant insect thing, worm thing, is writhing around on the floor at your feet in its death throes.
Oh, okay, so it's outside with me.
Yeah, you've cut it in half, and the front half is on the floor at your feet, oozing gunk.
Goodness! And he's gonna try to stomp on the half-dead, half-spliced-open thing.
Okay. That's not a difficult thing to do. You stomp it into oblivion with your big hunchback feet.
That was a sockdolager of a thing to say. He's gonna scramble away from the door and look to Estelle, and he's gonna say, "We gotta get him some help, ma'am. Will you help me move him?"
Certainly.
And he's gonna grab him by like underneath of his arms and try to hoist him up.
I'll assist as best I can.
Where are you gonna drag him to? You can get from here. You can get to the stage. You can get to the under the stage storage bit, and the men's dressing room as well.
Oh, let's go to the stage.
Yeah. Okay.
So as our producer, our director, and our, in inverted commas, star are having a bit of a discussion, suddenly a moaning, crying out, covered in bugs, Mr. Boggs is dragged out onto stage by Otto and Estelle. And it's quite the unpleasant sight. Now you're out here in the light, you can see the state that Mr. Boggs is in. He's covered in shallow cuts, as if he's been kind of stabbed with some very small blade lots and lots and lots of times. With the exposed flesh of his hands and face. He's still got some of these insects clinging to him, and they're big. They're not mosquitoes or whatever. They're some weird big tropical thing. There's still a dozen or so on them. They're dropping off as you drag him onto the stage. Those of you who didn't witness Mr. Boggs emerging from the dressing room, you are going to need to make a sanity check when you see the bizarre sight of him being dragged out here covered in insects.
Saw that one coming. I've led up to saying that line too many times, so I know it's coming. I rolled a 26, which is a success.
Okay, and Mr. Cole, a sanity check for you, please.
I had an extreme success, and in the vein of that extreme success, Cole doesn't get any closer to Boggs as he's writhing on the floor, but Cole kind of leans in a bit towards him on the stage and says,
"Were you able to get the theater open?"
For Mr. Boggs to be able to answer, you're going to need to calm him down a bit. Someone's going to need to do something to stop the pain, bring him round, whatever.
Fucking hell. I'm going to go grab his bottle of alcohol.
Oh, nice.
From the back room.
Chug.
Yeah, I'm going to give him some painkiller, basically, and grab the bottle and kind of shove it in.
Estelle's going to try to calm him down. I'm going to rip off part of like the bottom of my skirt and like its bandages and maybe try to wrap some of the worst welts.
So Estelle, please make a first aid test. Because Mr. Boggs is being granted the mother's milk of alcohol at the same time, I'm going to give you a plus 20% bonus to it.
Okay. That with the plus 20%, that is a success.
Excellent. All right. You brush the worst of the bugs off and you bandage up with a bit of sort of dual healing potion and antiseptic action of this bourbon.
I always have some embalming fluids on me. They help.
Oh, God. Mr. Boggs, after a few moments, kind of is a bit more sensible. He's hurt. He's been bitten all over. He's coming out in these big, ugly welts. But he is at least able to speak. And he says to you, "We're trapped in here, sir. There ain't no way out. Outside is... I don't know what. I don't know if, even know if we're still here. But there ain't a way out. Not like walking out a door or climbing out a window. I don't know what you done. I don't know what's in that there book," he says, pointing at one of the copies that is on the, of the King in Yellow on the stage. "But it's trapped us here. You done something. Y'all done something.
All we've done is out here. Now shut up, you crazy old fool. What the hell was out there? I mean, some kind of monstrous bug thing or a bunch of big mosquitoes? I mean, what the hell is it?"
"I saw past it just a little. Just as they were coming in through the window, I tried to open it. It ain't Arkham out there no more."
"Where will we get an audience?"
"Who's going to feed my cat?"
"What should I do with this?" And Otto holds up the half of the bug that he's brought with him.
"Sweet Jesus."
Jack is sobering up again and he doesn't like it.
We gotta... Are they gonna be able to get in here as well? Because if they do, then we're all fucked as well.
I don't know. I just... All I know is you gotta get out of here. Listen, my great aunt, she knew about this stuff. Some of the things you was talking about, Mr. Deacon, when he said about seeing things, that's the stuff she'd talk about as well. Our world's beyond this one, stranger, full of madness, and when foolish men try to tap into their power, them worlds touch our own. I think that's what you've done. I think that's what's happened. I don't think we're in Arkham no more."
And as the words escape his lips, a curtain falls. Not upon your stage, but upon ours. And Act 1, Scene 1, draws to a close.
Amazing. Amazing stuff. That was a fantastic episode for me to experience as a player. Hopefully you guys listening in have enjoyed this one as well. If you did, then please do let us know. We would love to hear your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions to Tomes and Tentacles Episode 1. Best way to get in touch with us is on Twitter at TentaclesPod. And of course, leave us a 5-star review to read out on iTunes. We'd love to hear them. We'd love to read what you guys are thinking about our mystery. And man, whew, I am just excited. As for myself, you can find me at EncounterRP on Twitter, where I run a bunch of other podcasts such as Tongue Cloaks and Wonder Quest. But let's go around to cast and crew. What did we think? Ben, my friend, amazing work. How do you feel that went?
Pretty well. I'm glad I got you guys to actually start trying to read some of The King in Yellow and experience the consequences thereof. And I really like how titanic a jerk Caesar is. That's going to be lots of fun.
Amazing. Let's go. Greg, what do you think of tonight's episode, my friend?
Well, I apologized originally for Caesar. I feel I should do so again. It is coming a little too easily, and that scares me a bit. But I will press on for art and for my own ego. Grimjack21502 on Twitch and Twitter. Please follow me there. But think about Cthulhu, everyone, because it's always there waiting, and we're always just one episode away. Can't wait to see you guys again.
Great stuff. Don.
Oh man, that was fantastic. I really enjoyed playing Otto. I loved everybody else's characters too. It's always fun getting to hear people sort of speak in their character for the first time and get to meet everybody. But the action really ramped up quickly. I think that's probably the most horrifying first episode of a Cthulhu game that I've seen.
Good, good. Excellent. This is pleasing to your keeper.
So I'm really excited to see what happens next. I'm really looking forward to it. And you can find me in the meantime on Twitter at Donathan Fry. I write comic books, and I'm currently writing The Blood Plague for Encounter Roleplay and doing some other things that are a lot of fun. So if you're interested, check me out.
Amazing. And Lindy.
Oh my gosh. I love everyone's characters. I think they are fantastic. We are the worst theater company ever, which makes it even better. yeah, I can't wait for the next one. Like this is going to be great. I don't know how we're going to get out of this theater or if we're going to get out of this theater, but you know, Estelle really needs to feed her cat. She can't be late for dinner. Otherwise, Phantom just gets really, really grumpy. And I need to get all those spines. How am I going to get spines if there's no bodies? But will there be bodies? Guess we'll have to find out.
Well, there's at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other ones, potentially.
And Lindy, Twitter?
Yes, you can find me mostly on Twitter and Twitch at LaughLoveLindy. Lots of Dungeons & Dragons, video game, cosplay stuff.
Incredible. Well, thank you guys for joining us for this first episode of Tomes and Tentacles. We hope that you enjoyed it, and until next time, try not to throw too many nat ones, because we want to be here laughing when you do. Good night, everybody.